Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of the Demcast Network. I'm Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today I'm going to be chatting with actor Xander Berkeley. You've seen him on The Walking Dead, Air Force One, Mommy Dearest, Sid and Nancy. He's also an accomplished painter and sculptor. He's the father of two daughters, and he has a few new movies coming out. He messaged me on Twitter not too long ago, and we had a conversation about how actors are liberal and why and all that. So we're going to get into that, and we're also going to just have a general discussion on all the things that are happening right now. We're going to talk about the need to remain sane in an insane world. We're going to talk about communism, socialism, the candidates, having civil discourse with each other, having some kind of a discourse where we can, you know, talk to people we don't agree with. We really got into it. So we also had some conversation, even though I know he didn't really want to. We had a little conversation about abortion, but it certainly didn't monopolize the show. Before we get started, I want to remind everybody that Start Me Up is an independent podcast. It's woman run, and I'm the woman. For the month of February, I'm going to be donating 5% of the podcast earnings to Planned Parenthood. Woohoo! So sign up. You know what? I want to also remind, because when I said Planned Parenthood, I just remembered Liz Winstead, who is one of the creators, she's a co-creator of The Daily Show and also founder of Lady Parts Justice, is supposed to be on this show on February 26th. Now, I would have not said anything, because every single time I do this, it seems like the show gets canceled. So I'm saying this now because she can't make it until after 5 p.m. And I usually do shows earlier than that. So I'm not sure, like, there might be a cancellation. And if there is, there will be a show on Thursday, because it'll be too late in the day for me to, you know, get a whole thing going. So just in case, hopefully we're going to talk to Liz Winstead. That will be completely awesome. I'm just really hoping there's going to be a decision in the Supreme Court about abortion. I think it's on March 4th, so we're going to talk about that. And that's why the Planned Parenthood thing reminded me. But anyway, back to it. If you like the show today, please consider becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. You sign up for $1. That gets you every podcast goes into your email box, and 5% of that goes to Planned Parenthood. $5 a month gets you into the patrons only segment, which I do at least two times a month. Sometimes I do it by myself. Sometimes I do it with a partner. It's usually just a little bit different, a little bit more personal. It's usually pretty fun. Sometimes I talk about things that I'm going through in my life, whatever. Just, you know, it's just something a little different just for patrons. If you'd like to make a one-time donation, check out the text of the Patreon description of the show. You're going to find my PayPal information and my email address. Whether you sign up as a monthly patron, whether you, you know, make a one-time donation, please understand that it's all appreciated. You help support the show that is Women Run. Also, you can find us on Start Me Up on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. It would be so awesome if you could go become a subscriber on Apple Podcasts and give Start Me Up a positive review and a good rating. My ranking is going up. We want to keep that building. Also, I need reviews, people. Can you please give me some good reviews? The last good review I had was in November. So, you know, I could use a good review. All right, that's it. I'm done. Now, please enjoy my conversation with Xander Berkeley. Welcome, Xander.
Hello.
It's nice to have you here.
Lovely to be here.
Yeah, we know each other from Twitter, and you know, we have similar interests and we align politically, and you're an actor and I used to be an actor. So it's good to have you on, and I'm really looking forward to this chat.
Yeah, me too. I have been since we first discussed the possibility.
So before we get into the political part of our conversation, let's talk a little about who you are and what you do. As you know, I used to be an actor, and I certainly do not have the long ass resume that you have, but I was on Days of Our Lives for 7 years. I played a police officer for the most part. I was hired as a model twice, and then I played a reporter, and then I played a police officer, and that stuck, and I was there for 7 years. And that's pretty much, I mean, I was on like Mad About You as a glorified extra. I was a bit part. But, and I, you know, I played Sybil Shepherd's, what do you call it? It's a Sega stand-in for a Mercedes commercial. But outside of that, you know, I don't have the kind of credits you have. You have some really impressive credits. And I did name some in the intro, but I kind of want to I know you're in The Walking Dead, and I want you to talk about some of the roles that you've been on, but you were in Sid and Nancy, and that's one of my favorite films. In fact, I read the book, And I Don't Want to Live This Life, by Nancy Spungen's mother, and I read it as a teen, and then I read it later as an adult, and it's so heartbreaking, and it's so upsetting, because Nancy Spungen seemed like she was just totally bothered with mental illness, and that really wasn't picked up in the film. But just tell me about your experience working on that film, just whatever it was. I want to know.
Yeah, well, it was I guess it was like 1985 that we shot that.
Yeah, and it's a while ago.
And it was right towards the end of the year. I remember, yes, it was 1985, because I remember having my 30th birthday party right after we wrapped. and we shot it in the fall and into the winter that year, and we all bonded. It was just I'm a big fan of Brian Eno's from way back, and he uses a term called "senius" to counter the I think especially the American obsession with genius, and that so often great things creatively come out of a group of people that just this confluence of mind and energy that, mm-hmm. that occurs on occasion when you're lucky. And that was certainly an example of it. The director, Alex Cox, was a very bright guy, British Oxford guy, but an anarchist and a mad rebel, kind of self-destructed in a lot of ways. I used to say he leveled his gaze at one foot and then turned to the other when it came to his relationship with the business. But bright guy, and he was married to Abby Wool at the time, and they co-wrote the script, and they sort of, I think, played out the Sid and Nancy parts in themselves,
wow.
in their relationship as they wrote the script. So that was already this kind of a dynamic of a kind of brilliance there. That was right after they'd done Repo Man, and it was just, they were riding high on a creative energy, fresh out of UCLA, and they brought a lot of people from that crowd that the casting director, Vicky Thomas, and others had all gone to school together, the editor as well, Nancy Richardson. And Nancy has gone on to just do absolutely brilliant work as an editor ever since then, as has Vicky Thomas, been one of the greatest casting directors in the industry for all these years since. But Roger Deakins was the cinematographer, and only last year got his first Academy Award, and then got it again this year. So they finally caught on to just how incredibly brilliant Roger Deakins is, and I think anybody that's seen any of his movies along the way know that as well. But there was something there, one of his first films, as well as Gary Oldman's first film. Gary won his first Academy Award last year, same time as Roger did.
Yeah.
Lo, these decades later. But yeah, there was just something in Chloe Webb, who played Nancy. Mm-hmm. It was just, everybody was just bringing their full game at that time, and we were all young and inspired, and inspired by one another, and I always felt just extraordinarily fortunate to fall into that one. It was one of those ones where from the audition, I'm a makeup artist from way back in the theater.
Oh, wow.
I'm a painter.
That's
and
cool.
A sculptor, and I just went for it on that one. I had my German kit, and I broke every little capillary. once I no longer need to break artificially, I brought them out, and I made my eyes red by smoking, getting a pack of cigarettes across the street and a warm bottle of beer in a brown paper bag, and letting the smoke go into my eyes so that I walked in there, people could smoke in offices back then. Sort of stumbled in with some egg whites in my hair to look like a street person. A certain soot. I had a little powder of gray patina, looked like over the whole film, just to look dirty. And
yeah.
I remember scuttling into the audition, and Vicky Thomas, the casting director, was going to be sending the audition to London, where they had already started filming, because they shot the film in a chronological sequence. And she looked at me and then looked at my resume picture, and I'd forgotten about the resume picture thing, that she'd have that. She says, "You look so different from your resume picture. And I said, well, you know, it's nice that I don't know how to show you that to get all spruced up.
Right. Oh, those auditions.
But anyway, I improvised in it. And then when I showed up in New York, I'll never forget the director, just sort of his mouth falling open because I showed up as myself. He goes, oh, you're so clean. I thought we had miraculously discovered the junkie who could act naturally in front of the camera. Oh, well. And he sort of pranced off.
So I
got back into my makeup the next day before I showed up on set. Sort of stayed that way for the rest of the film and became that persona, which was kind of like a court jester to a lot of people. And it was really fun because, you know, when you're younger, you can kind of get away with sort of staying in character. I stopped doing that a long time ago. But in that case, it was kind of perfect because they'd been filming for a while and tensions had started to form. And my character was, as much as he was this low-life drug dealer, somehow... the persona that I'd adopted from reading William Burroughs and different other things from doing research was that he was one of these guys that could just sort of charm people, even though he was low life. And so I sort of worked that on the set where tensions were rising between Gary and Chloe, between Alex and Gary and different people, and just sort of making everybody have a chuckle while you sort of stayed in character.
So
that's my story on Sid and Nancy.
Wow. I just love that movie, and it's always fun to kind of hear like the behind the scenes stuff. As much as, you know, I never acted in a film, although my mother did. She acted in a few films, and I was kind of like hanging out on set. So I've been on some movie sets, but it's always like fun to hear, you know, like that behind the scenes thing. But I'm curious because you refer to yourself as an accomplished painter and sculptor. So what does accomplished mean?
Well, did I say accomplished? I thought I said I'm a painter and a sculptor, or I'm also a painter and a sculptor. I sell my paintings. I just had a great show in Chicago, and people say nice things about my work.
That's awesome.
So I guess I'm accomplished.
Yeah, that is.
I would think it'd be a little bit immodest for me to have claimed that. But
well,
I've been doing
I
it
just
my
figured...
whole life. My father was a great painter and a printmaker, and he was an illustrator who went on to become a book designer and then head of the art department for a publishing company.
Wow.
To support us, and gave my sister and myself art supplies at each interval, birthdays and Christmas, and so I was exposed to it and given instruction in it from a very early stage on, and I had that hand-eye coordination that I could draw and get a likeness when I was quite young.
You know, somebody that I know who's also an actor, and he's also, and I would say he's an accomplished painter and sculptor. His name is Adam Stone. Everybody should check him out. Go on, you know, he's on Facebook and Instagram. He's a friend of mine, and I met him on Facebook because I had, you know, become aware of his paintings, and he describes them as fantastical, and they really are. He, you know, he obviously, as you know, painters, any kind of artist is going to have, you know, they're going to be in the mood for this month they're going to be, or this year they're going to be painting this kind of a painting, and then it moves on. So he has actually moved on to sculpting, and he's got these awesome paintings. He does a lot of elephants, and he's also done he's done like the Wizard of Oz, but it's his version of it, and then other fairy tales. He's got so many cool, weird, it's like, it's really interesting. So I love when people are artistic all the way around, and that's clearly you, because you are working as an actor and you're also working as a painter and sculptor. And so that's going to lead me into the idea, because I really want to, I thought this was such an interesting idea, and I agree with you that being an actor or creative person, it makes you, especially an actor, it makes you empathic, because as you said, you walk in other people's shoes. So I want to talk about that with you in terms of politics, and especially where we are right now in this very divided climate, and I just want to hear what your thoughts are about that.
Well, I mean, I put my thoughts out there constantly, and I've sacrificed at least half of my Twitter
yes, we base. All have.
boom, the minute I started doing it, especially The Walking Dead, I think had a lot of I would say that the base, the fan following was as much, a Trump crowd as it was not. And so literally half of my money just dropped off the minute I started to put my views out. And I remember along the way, just people being so angry. Also, I played a lot of characters that were like the character I played in the show Nikita, mm-hmm. This character Percy, very Republican. And I did a lot of research and I didn't look down my nose at him. I gave him a three-dimensional reality for this show and thought the way he thinks. And that's what you're referring to, is I put myself in mm-hmm. the shoes of others, whether they're whatever it is. And I tried to do that as a person. I try to have civil discourse on Twitter and not engage in the name calling and the invective and the insults. Although sometimes it's hard.
When it's Matt Gaetz, though, when it's Matt Gaetz and Trump, all bets are off. Fuck them.
Yeah. Some of it is just so infuriating. The people that support him without questioning, it do infuriate me. But I try not to use the really bad language. And I always am open to discussion.
Right.
And, this is just, I just feel in general, I feel Democrats would be really wise to stop insulting each other, for starters, especially for just engaging in the process of accumulating data and mm-hmm. information and considering their options, because I feel our priority has to be to get rid of this hateful, toxic atmosphere that I feel Trump has played on from the minute he started the campaign mm-hmm. and has played on ever since he rose to power. He activates and energizes his base through pandering to their hatefulness and their fears and the lowest common denominator that's obviously paid off for him. It works. Fear, intolerance, and nationalism have for years been the trifecta of mass hypnosis by governments.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter which government we're talking about. If they, in order to get people to fork over their hard-earned dollars and send their children off to war, to die in a war, it takes a pretty powerful formula to get their thinking oriented towards the government's agenda. Mm-hmm. And so it has been used by, and it's a form of propaganda, and it works. You get people scared, and then you get them intolerant of that which is different from themselves. And then you get them to wave a little flag so they're willing to go off to war and kill or be killed.
Yeah.
And, the amount of money that goes into our defense spending at this point, we could blow the planet up hundreds of thousands of times over.
Yeah.
It's redundant.
Yeah, it is.
And it's obscene that we let our people die, that poverty exists to the extent that we do, that homelessness exists to the extent that it does, and that the healthcare is in the state that it's in. But we make killing, redundant killing, our priority for spending. And I feel like Trump's pandered to this war cry and building up the military so he'll have them on his side, just like he panders to the people that have all the guns stockpiled and throws them the red meat constantly that they need to be paranoid and feel justified in stockpiling their guns and mm-hmm. get ready to go out in the streets at any minute to defend their liberties because someone's going to take their guns away from them. It's a hateful ideology, and it disturbs me. And then it disturbs me to see back to your original statement, I think actors tend to be liberals because we put ourselves in the skin of others and mm-hmm. the shoes of others in general for a living. And so we can't help. But in my case, I've been in over 100 films, and so many of them are shot in foreign countries that I've gone And like Mark Twain said, the best way to overcome bigotry is to travel. Mm-hmm. And by getting outside of your little bubble.
Yeah.
And to go and live in other places and see how others live and function. And you're constantly reminded that we're all one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are. And it's, you know, I mean, I had the opportunity to live in Russia when I was 12 years old because my father worked for ABC News. And that was when it was Soviet Russia. And I've written about this and I've talked about it a lot, so I won't, you know, go on and on. But what I witnessed over there was, because of the Soviet rule, it was kind of like living in a prison, kind of like it was a police state. But, you know, I mean, it was like living in a prison for a couple of reasons. It was like there was a dankness. Like I said that I smelled it. I could smell Soviet. And there was just this, you know, a friend of mine who I went to school with over there described it as stale bubble yum, which I don't necessarily know if I agree with that, but there was this weird kind of stale sweetness, and it was just old. You know, people were cramped into, let's say, you know, 7-8 people living in one apartment with one bathroom and maybe one bedroom, and they were, you know, all huddled around the stove in wintertime because it was so cold, and it was just something that none of us can imagine. And
yeah.
I think that, you know, I mean, the opportunity to live over there, even though at the time, I was 12, and I had arrogance because, you know, I came over from America thinking, you know, I wasn't really, I didn't want to go. My father and mother were split up and divorced, and my father was remarried. And so, you know, I was used to living with my mom, and the idea of moving to a foreign country scared the shit out of me, and I didn't want to go. And eventually I did. My mother was like, you're going. You are going to have this experience. You are going to live with your father. And so I'm really grateful that I was pushed to do it, because obviously it gave me such a unique perspective. But it's like, it makes me recognize now how quickly our country could, I mean, we're never going to necessarily be Soviet rule, but I can see how if we get a second Trump term, that's it, we're done. And it goes over to what the current Russia is now, which is an oligarchy where basically, you know, the top tier have all the money and the rest fight for it. So, and it would be an awful situation, and I wish people would realize that more. But what I'm seeing, though, is people are... voters specifically are panicking, and it's totally understandable that we're nervous and we're afraid. But it is it's getting to a point where it's starting to worry me, because and I posted this on Twitter today. I want to get your thoughts on this. But I mean, I said Mueller was not our savior. Joe Biden is not our savior. Bernie Sanders is not, and neither is Bloomberg. There is, and as much as I love Elizabeth Warren, she isn't our savior. We don't have one. Our savior is us. We have to show up in November in numbers so big that cheating isn't going to be able to work. And I think that's possible, and I think that that's probably likely. We can't count on that, so we should all don't get happy. But I feel...
Well, the only thing that guarantees that won't happen is if this continued... through the ambition of supporting any given candidate continues to blind people mm-hmm. in a myopic way of that to get them to forget that end goal. And then they put their personal passion for this particular candidate ahead. And I couldn't agree with you more. I liked that post that you made about we have no saviors other than ourselves and our collectivity, and that maybe harkens back to the notion of senius, of we need to rely upon and our being one, that we need to be a collective that mm-hmm. is concerned with the well-being of the planet.
Yes.
And number one, because without the planet, we don't survive.
Right.
And this backwards anti-science putting, you know, the profits of oil companies and others ahead of the survival of the planet is insanity.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and,
it is.
And that we need to have a candidate, and all of the Democrats, as far as I can make out, you know, are going to make a huge shift in that.
Yeah.
And then so too with healthcare, and as opposed to, you know, Trump's lying about protecting those with pre-existing conditions when he has deliberately gone about undoing ACA before there was anything put forth to take its place, and them targeting pre-existing conditions from day one, the minute they got elected, to benefit the profits of the insurance companies and all the rest of their corporate interests. You know, with any of the Democrats, we're going to improve the healthcare situation, which is so critically important to so many Americans. And then, of course, we're going to, I think, if we just remember the long-range aim of being our own saviors, then and put aside this, you know, jockeying for power of who's more right, of which, who's got the savior, and making that somehow more important than winning the general election. We've got to calculate at every moment, make our calculus, what will help us win the general election. And, and there are pointing out the things that, yes, Bernie can motivate the youth, and that's key to get the excitement of people, you know, canvassing and volunteering and voting. Absolutely, it's a huge base. There's also the reality that, you know, I'll discuss on at first on Twitter, I put out views that were liberal or left, and they'd get shouted out, you're an actor, why don't you just keep being an actor?
Yeah, of course.
And shut the fuck up.
But James Woods gets to talk shit all he wants.
What's that?
I said, but James Woods gets to talk shit all he wants.
Yeah, yeah. And they all do. I mean, somehow all these people, and there are a lot of backwoods types that, you know, are clearly like hunkered down with arsenals and not terribly well educated, that can't form a sentence without grammatical or spelling errors in their vile sort of refutation of all of my points. And I'm trying to be respectful and, you know, reasonably well informed when I'm putting them out there, and I'm getting this, just this wash of hostility and, you know, ad hominem vulgar attacks back and threatening attacks and all the rest of it from the right, which I kind of got used to. But the thing that's been blowing my mind lately, because I would slowly, people say, well, you can't engage with these people, but I kept finding that I could. And sort of the hostility waves would lessen when, even if just one in a thread gave me props for having an open dialogue and for not being ugly with them and, you know, just having discourse. And I think that our society, especially the more people have become isolated in their devices and on the internet, away from physical, actual contact with one another, a big ill in our society at this point, that if we can treat others as human beings when we're communicating, and even if it's the extremes of left and right, we're going to have a better result in the long run, and people will be more inclined to hear our point of view if we treat them and their point of view with some degree of respect. And the thing that, you know, so I sort of came around to, like, well, it's worth continuing to put it out there, and you know, you can weather the backlash if there's one person that you end up, and I've become really good friends with a lot of people on the right through these exchanges, because I'm always trying to get more educated, and you're inevitably going to learn more by talking to somebody that has a different point of view than yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I had Joe Walsh on my show I was like a couple of months ago, and he's coming back. He's got a new book out, so he wants to push that. And, you know, he is, he used to be Tea Party. And right now, I guess he's identifying as a conservative libertarian, maybe a Republican.
He's transitioning.
Pardon me?
Well, he's transitioning.
I would love for him to go all the 180. But I respect him because out of all the Never Trumpers, he does not attack Democrats. And I mean, I've seen Steve Schmidt do it, who was also on my show, and he kind of disappointed me because I felt that he was a little, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this because he has run campaigns and he's a smart guy, but I feel that he was being naive about what would happen if Trump got a second term. But beyond that, I've seen him on, you know, Morning Joe attacking Elizabeth Warren and calling her a hypocrite when she was being called a hypocrite for something quite minor. And, you know, I mean, if we're going to get into the weeds, Joe Biden is filled with hypocrisy. I don't hate Joe Biden, and I would gladly vote for him if he's the nominee. He's not my first choice. But, you know, each candidate, you can find hypocrisy because human beings are hypocrites by nature, some more than others. But, you know, I like
politicians in particular because they have to, you know, it's just part of the nature of the beast on a certain level because they're trying to say things that will generate a base. And then they're trying to placate a wider audience in the next breath.
Exactly. So. Yeah. And so, I mean, I feel like, but in the bigger picture, I just kind of want to get back to the idea that what I'm witnessing right now from people is a panic. And, you know, I put this out on Twitter yesterday, and I want to reemphasize this because I think it's a good point. You know, if you were ill and you needed an operation, would you prefer that your doctor be panicked and freaked out, or cautious and, you know, measured? So it's like right now, say you got a gunshot and you're like on the verge of dying. You don't want to have a doctor who's going, oh my God, I don't know what to do. Oh my God. I guess I'm just going to do this. And I'm, you know, it's like, no, we have to calm the fuck down. It's really scary. And, you know, right now there's a question. Rachel Maddow did a show a couple of nights ago talking about the idea, what's to stop Donald Trump from arresting the Democratic nominee at this point? Who's going to stop him? I mean, we're not sure if Bill Barr is going to step down. I don't know what the fuck's going on with Bill Barr.
Oh, he's not. That's a complete dog and pony show.
I agree with you. But I feel like no matter what happens there, if Bill Barr is still around, he's not going to stop Donald. No one's going to stop Donald. So this is something that might happen. And if it happens, everybody needs to be mentally prepared for it and have some kind of an idea of like, all right, we knew this was coming and we're not going to panic.
I know. This troubles me because I mean, Bill Maher says it so eloquently each time, but then I feel like, is this like visualization where if we keep saying it, it's going to happen?
Yeah.
About how he's not going to leave in 2024.
Right. It's like, well, Michael Cohen warned us that he wouldn't. You know, and I have a feeling that Bill Maher and Michael Cohen are correct. And I think, you know, we're going to have to.
I think he got the idea from Michael Cohen. And then he went, yeah, no, there are no indications that he would, that there's anything that is going to, you know, it's just, this is a little boy who never got punished, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
Never got told no. Mm-hmm. And wasn't taught basic human decency and respect, and so he grew up without taking personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. He found he could not pay his bills and not suffer consequences. He found he could assault women and not pay consequences. He found he could not pay taxes and not pay consequences. Mm-hmm. Because he figured out how to game the system, because he had an arsenal of lawyers that daddy provided for him. Mm-hmm. Instead of principles to live by, he had lawyers to protect him and threaten and go after anybody who came after him. And he created fake news with his pal Pecker, the Pecker head over at an Inquirer.
Perfect name.
And yeah, some people get the names they deserve. And Trump is among them.
Yes.
Talk about hypocrites. I loved when he came after John Stewart for changing his name.
Oh my God, yeah.
Trump. It's just like, what do we do? I don't know. I think we do have to keep level, calm heads, show up in record numbers, and I think we need to get out in the streets. Mm-hmm. While we still can, and show the force of numbers of people resisting this form of lawless, non-constitutional behavior. It's out of line, you know. It's just remarkable to me that this person is able to set an example for the next generation of, you know, it doesn't matter how hard you work, how much you know, it doesn't matter how honest you are. You don't have to do things well. You just have to break the rules, break the laws, mm-hmm. cheat and steal, and you get there.
Yeah.
And that's, what is that message? It's horrifying.
It is.
That's the decline of Western civilization in a complete, you know, wrecking ball.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes back to the idea that we're the ones who have to save ourselves. And, you know, I mean, I'm seeing some people are arguing with me and they're taking a bit of a tone and going, well, we need the right candidate. And it's like, as if I don't know what I'm talking about. But obviously we need the right candidate. But right now, all the polls indicate each and every Democrat would beat Trump. Now, obviously, some people are leading in those polls. But I think what we need to do specifically when it comes to the primary is, you know, we were forced the idea that Joe Biden was the only one. He was the one that was going to beat Trump. He was our savior. And
then Trump succeeded the same way he did with Hillary. He created the illusion of corruption.
Yes, exactly. But with, you know, with
and somehow only liberals and people on the left have conscience and are affected by that. Somehow yeah. They don't care on the right.
No, they don't
care.
They
know he's corrupted, but he's a winner.
Yes. But the idea is, you know, there isn't this one candidate who's going to do it. I mean, we all have our favorites, and sure, the polls are going to show us. I mean, the polls showed us that Hillary was going to take the election, and then look what happened. I mean, cheating got in the way. But it's the idea that we can't be basing our primary vote on what we think is the person who's going to win. I mean, I don't want to tell anybody how to vote. You vote.
I know.
Well,
the other thing is that it's calculus, and we have to kind of keep collecting data and being in communication with one another. And I think that the more we learn how to communicate politely, mm-hmm. and encourage open flow of communication rather than discourage it with this idiotic name-calling nonsense that goes on so much, and a pile-up of, you know, accusations and hostility for somebody that's questioning their candidate, you know, it needs to be considered, no matter how much you may support Sanders, what is his impact going to be to energize the right wing? Mm-hmm. That is terrified, that has been taught for four straight years to be terrified of the word socialism when he's a self-proclaimed socialist, mm-hmm. and who honeymooned in Russia, mm-hmm. and who has kept these ideals alive. Yeah, well, it's like that Winston Churchill thing in terms of appealing to the youth. Anybody who wasn't a communist before the age of 30 has no heart, and anyone that's still a communist, mm-hmm. after the age of 30 has no brain. That he's going to have the people under 30, but there's a lot of people over 30 that are going to be voting in record numbers, mm-hmm. on the right because they're terrified, mm-hmm. of, they've been taught to and are rightfully, because those of us, especially who grew up in the Cold War, are scared of the word socialism. And so they're going to show up and he could conceivably lose us the House and the Senate, our shot at the Senate. So that is a real consideration, mm-hmm. that Democrats need to put into the equation when they go, wow, okay, we need to look at that and look at it dispassionately.
Yes,
and just
that's
go,
the whole
okay,
point.
How do we deal with that as a reality?
Yes, it's dispassionate.
And not by attacking and assaulting all the other Democrats in the field, or people that are considering going with another candidate, but staying together and connected and being reasonable. And it's almost like there's this, it's like the freaky Antifa movement that gives so much fuel to the right, mm-hmm. that they don't see that they're oblivious to the numbers of hate crimes that have occurred since Trump has come in against people of color, Muslims and women and just all the Mexicans that have suffered so much since he started, you know, calling them an infestation, mm-hmm. and an invasion of rapists and murderers. And maybe some of them are okay, but they all have excuses for this language,
right.
of his. But
well, yeah, they're blindly following him, and basically they're a cult. I think as far as Bernie is concerned, I'm hesitant to. I mean, I totally agree with you. And I think that, you know, each candidate has a strength and each candidate has a weakness. And with Bernie, I, you know, obviously the people who are concerned about where he might take us, it all falls into the socialist purview. It's because basically, you know, Trump has been referring to him as a communist, and democratic socialism is different than communism, obviously. But on the right, there is no difference. And some people on the left don't understand what the difference is. I see centrist Democrats who are frightened of him and they hate him, and they see is, I don't want a socialist. And it's like, well, you know, please understand what socialist is. Democratic socialist is Social Security. It is Medicare. It is repairing roads. It's the fire department. It's the police department. It's public education. That's your tax dollars going in to programs that will help all of us. And so I like the idea of having, I know there are people out there that believe capitalism is the worst thing in the world, but I'm kind of like with Elizabeth Warren. I think we can have healthy capitalism as long as...
I am too. I agree with her.
Yeah, the wealthy people need to put in their fair share. They can't get all the breaks. And if they get, you know, if we have wealth tax and all that, capitalism is going to thrive and the middle class is going to thrive. And so, you know, I mean, as much as I would love to see Elizabeth Warren, she is hated by Wall Street, and, you know, there's this whole where is Warren is trending because there are polls that she's being left out of. NBC News offered a poll and she wasn't in it. And so I think part of this is, you know, corporate media listening to their, you know, people who are funding them, and they don't like her. And that sounds very conspiratorial, but is Warren?
I felt that was what was happening last time around in 2016 with Bernie. I kept wondering, like, why is this is like when he showed up in New Hampshire and won, and when he started winning all these different primaries, the fact that he wasn't, like, even CNN, I was like, what's the deal? Why aren't they following this story? This is a huge story. Mm-hmm. And they weren't. And I immediately suspected, you know, as much as they all look like they're, you know, the liberal media, right, and are accused of that all the time. I thought, this is a corporation that is owned and threatened by the challenge that he represents to their status quo. Mm-hmm. And so whereas Hillary was not.
Right.
And so they just kept pushing the Hillary story.
Well, that's why we have to keep in mind, like, when we're seeing polls, like when Joe Biden was, and, you know, I mean, absolutely the fact that Donald Trump, you know, pushed the corruption idea on Biden, I'm sure that's had some play. But overall, I think that we have been fed narratives by a corporate media. And I do not want to completely diss the media. I mean, I do speak out against them, some of the things that they do and say I disagree with. But, you know, I don't think we should have a culture that doesn't believe any kind of journalist or media.
They
have an agenda.
The way they want to just, like, write off all of MSM as fake news, because these are still the outlets that vet their journalists.
Absolutely.
Journalists get fired if they tell lies. Mm-hmm. So there is that, as opposed to the alt-right paranoid conspiracy theory outlets on the internet where there are no consequences for just making shit up.
Yeah.
And that's what these people on the right are all, you know, cleaving to, which is insane, because he's told them that up is down and down is up, mm-hmm. and they believe him. But in terms of the media, I agree. I just feel like we've all got sucked into the animus of our Trump loathing, and they know that that makes for good mm-hmm. business, and so they give it to us 24/7 on cable news, and some of our favorite TV journalists happen to be there, and mm-hmm. so we're drawn to them, and we want to hear that, and it reinforces our bubble.
Yeah.
And same thing on the right with theirs and Fox, and, you know, everybody's got an agenda. I think it's very clear what mm-hmm. happened. I heard such an interesting report from somebody in Australia talking about the extent to which Rupert Murdoch's support of that candidate that is the president, the prime minister of Australia, is just a guy that will pass his anti-climate change agenda so that he can continue to make billions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And not, you know, he's invested in oil and all these other things that profit from, you know, being a climate change denier. And Fox, Rupert Murdoch runs Fox, and they do the same thing. They've chosen Trump for the same reason, because Now, as if money was what it was all about at the end of the day. And I think they all fall a little bit prey to that because they're money-making institutions. But I do love some of the journalists that,
yes, me too.
On the right who have gone to the left.
Oh, right. Know? Yeah, like Nicole Wallace. She's great.
Nicole Wallace and Bill Kristol. And I'm a huge fan of Rick's. I'm sure you are.
Well, actually, I'm not a fan of Rick. I appreciate...
Oh, really?
I appreciate...
his humor.
Yes, I do. But this is what I feel about him. I know, and I never can remember the name, but I do know that there... I can't remember what year it was. It was before Trump. But he, you know, was a strategist and was hired to help out this one particular candidate who was running against a veteran who had lost both legs and an arm. And Rick did a terrible attack ad on this veteran. And I feel like what's going to happen is we have all these Democrats that love him right now. And it's understandable because he's got a wicked sense of humor and he knows how to punch Trump. And we love that. But I think we have to be careful because he's going to punch us. If we get the, you know, House and the Senate and the presidency, I have a feeling we're going to see Rick going against us the next time around. So I don't necessarily love him. I have some,
yeah.
I mean, and I don't mean to scold anybody who likes him. I just, my personal experience, he has been an asshole toward me when I had conversations with him, when I disagree. I mean, I've agreed with him plenty of times and I've quote tweeted him and said, you know, he's right on this. But there were times where I disagreed with him and I commented and then he would quote tweet me so that everybody on his page could see that he was mocking me, and he did it several times in one day. And my boyfriend actually was disagreeing with him on the same subject and did not quote tweet my boyfriend to mock him. So I don't necessarily appreciate his tactics, but I do understand and I do appreciate them when it's, you know, he makes these fucking amazing ads for the Lincoln Project, and you know, he really knows how to just go after someone. And, you know, he referred to, I can't remember who it was, but he was going after a guy and he called him impotent. And, you know, I mean, he knows what he's doing. You know, I mean, I'll give him that.
Yeah, I kind of agree. He's like my guilty pleasure because he does indulge in the invective. And I guess satisfies that impulse in me sometimes when I get so frustrated. But I hear what you're saying, and I do think we have to just, in general, I mean, I like to believe that he's been enlightened beyond where he was at that point when I didn't know he was involved in that attack ad. I remember that ad, and it's revolting against the vet.
Yeah, I mean,
was the better candidate,
I would hope.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, I like to think these people have had a come to God moment about the GOP in general.
Yeah.
And are sort of seeing things from a less skewed lens than they once were.
Because, well, that's what I see about Joe Walsh. I mean, even and Bill Kristol, because I can't believe that, you know, I agree with Bill Kristol, but I do. And, you know, and Joe Walsh, he was awesome. You know, I mean, I don't agree with him on a lot of things, but he, you know, I do think that the man has realized that he... And he has, because he said he has. You know, he like fell into the tribalism. And
yeah, you can see it. You can see that he's had a change.
Yeah.
You know.
He means what he's saying. And I, you know, even though I don't agree with him and I wish he were, you know, I'm a liberal now, I appreciate the fact that he, you know, is like, I'm going to remain true to what I believe, but I also am going to call out the bullshit on my side. And so, hey, I can't really ask any more than that. And, you know, I get a lot of shit from people. I know that he was recently on Alyssa Milano's podcast, and I was reading some of the comments, and they were saying, you know, negative things about him. And that's fine. You're allowed to have your opinion, and I certainly never like to force my opinion on anyone. But I look at it like we're in such a dire situation, and when there is a person who is saying, look, I voted for Trump, I regret it, and now I am willing to vote for the Democrat, and I'm willing to call out people who I've called my friend, like Jim Jordan and other members of Congress, he does that. And, you know, and he does it with grace. He's never an asshole. He used to be one, but he isn't anymore. He's decided I'm done with that.
It reminds me of that sweet guy, I'm forgetting his name, that ran last time around and was considering the Midwestern senator, really sweet guy.
Running for president?
Yeah, last time around. And
Okay. I can't think of his name, but I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about. He was the one really reasonable guy in the mix.
Yeah.
And he was always, and he has continued
to be
the
veteran.
One. Say it again?
Wasn't he a veteran?
I feel like he was older now.
I'm
he's not running
up.
This time around. He toyed with it for a little while, maybe a year or so ago. Definitely a Midwesterner. And I'm mad at myself for forgetting
his
name.
Well, I'm going to look it up right now.
There are, you know, I have to say, I think that Mitt Romney's courage to say what he said, you know, everybody still loves to hold Mitt's feet to the fire on the left, but I still think it took tremendous personal courage to say what he did and suffer the you know the incredible toxic backlash that he did.
Yeah, yeah. Oh wait, let me see. Is it Jim Webb?
No.
Lincoln Chafee?
No.
Martin O'Malley?
No.
Those were the three.
Damn.
Outside of Bernie.
Damn, I'm gonna have to look up.
Well, it might be Jim Webb, but Jim, you know, my dad was kind of, Jim Webb is a veteran, and I know my dad.
I like
was,
Jim Webb.
Yeah, yeah, my dad was a little fond of him, but he just didn't have the, he just didn't have it. He didn't have the energy that was needed, especially while, you know, you have Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, who are both very big personalities. Jim Webb just kind of was quiet, and he just didn't impress anybody, so he didn't last very long. But yeah, I know my dad was kind of fond of him. At the time, I was a Bernie supporter in 2016. I was a hardcore
Bernie
supporter.
Yeah, me too.
And
me too. You know, out of the whole 99% movement, I thought he had the voice at the time. Kasich is who I'm thinking
of. Oh, Kasich? Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah,
John
well,
Kasich.
See, and I have issues with him only because he is totally not into giving women bodily autonomy. So I don't like that.
Oh yeah, he's one of those.
But he's reasonable in that he's not one of these Trumpers. You know, I mean, he is anti-abortion, which I can't support that. But I recognize that, you know, when you have a scale. When the Trumpers are on one end and then like old school Republicans are on the other, he's like the old school Republican.
Yeah, and you know it's funny because I have empathy for these people that have that point of view. Only you know I couldn't be a stronger proponent of women's autonomy with their own bodies, for God's sake. And the government, why do they want a smaller government, but they want a government
right.
that's big enough to tell women what to do with their bodies is insane to me. But I do understand people that are genuinely either religious or mm-hmm. just spiritual on a level of...
Yeah, that's what they believe.
You know, the numbers, the statistics for abortion have gotten got so crazy, and it just became a form of birth control for people. And I think that it's... Those numbers are so disturbing to so many people that I can't write them off for being disturbed.
Well, but I'm gonna have to disagree with you in that. First of all, I would say abortion is birth control; it controls having birth. But I think that you know part of the reason people are going for birth, or I'm sorry, choosing abortion in some cases, it's because they don't have access to contraception. And it's harder, you know, when somebody gets pregnant. I've never had an abortion, but I can tell you that there were times in my life that I was dating someone or whatever the story was, and if I were to become pregnant because of failed contraception or whatever it was, I would have chosen abortion. And I, you know, I said this on Twitter not too long ago, but choosing abortion, like I call myself pro-abortion, but that doesn't mean I celebrate it. I celebrate the fact that I have bodily autonomy, but I don't celebrate abortion. I'm grateful and I'm pro-abortion just as I would be pro-colonoscopy, right? Like I'm grateful for the procedure, but nobody wants to deal with the procedure. Some people
I
have
just wish that the I couldn't agree with you more. I just wish the left would take an issue like, you know, if insurance policies are providing for men to get Viagra,
yeah.
then they ought to be providing for women to get birth control pills. And we ought to be doing everything possible and supporting the aspect of Planned Parenthood that was about making contraception widely available and education widely available, as well as taking care of women's health on all fronts.
Yeah, because no one wants to have to make that choice. If we have to, we're grateful that it's there. And for some people, it's a moral thing. For some people, it's not. For some people, it's an easy decision to make, and it has nothing to do with morality. The only negative part of the experience is having to go through the procedure, which is not fun. It's like getting your teeth pulled or, like I said, a colonoscopy. It's not a fun procedure. So, you know, I think that, you know, as if we know that contraception, and especially free or, you know, readily available and inexpensive contraception, reduces abortion. And, you know, Hillary Clinton said, you know, we want to make it whatever and rare, available and inexpensive and rare, something like that. And I know that some feminists took, like, they got upset when she said that because it sounded to them as if it was, how do you say, like, kind of judgy. And I look at it like, look, any woman who gets pregnant and doesn't want to be pregnant is going to be grateful that they have the choice, but no one wants to deal with the procedure. And so rare to me means let's avoid it if we can. I want to avoid
that
it
at all costs. And I think it's a form of insanity that people don't get on board, and they want to make the allow the Democratic Party to become stigmatized as the murderers of embryo, you know, like, forget babies. But then even to that extreme, I've been seeing this stuff in some exchanges where there are actual, you know, Democratic congressmen and women and senators that support this very late stage thing where, like, after the baby is out and alive, that they think that it's okay to have it done away with. And that's, to me,
But that's not reality. That's not what's happening. What's his name? Northam from Virginia put that out there because he didn't understand what was happening. There's a great article in the New York Times written by Jennifer Kundo. She is a gynecologist. She had that exact thing happen where I think she had twins, or it was three, it was triplets or twins. But I think one of those, one of the fetuses, and then eventually came out as a baby, was going to die. And basically, the parents and the doctor had to figure out how they were going to deal with this infant that was going to die. So you can medicate it. There are all these choices. But this idea that people are having children and then they're killing the children is not real. That is against the law. That is a myth that has been, actually, Trump has been perpetuating this myth. And it's not true. There is no such thing as elective late-term abortion, because any woman who's 6, 7, 8 month pregnant walks into a doctor and says, I want to have an abortion, they're not going to let her. They're not going to do it.
The optics on that Virginian...
It was bad. He fucked it up.
Has been exploited endlessly on the right.
Yes, and, it absolutely has.
General,
but it's not true.
It's just like, you know, one of the things I like about Pete Buttigieg is his ability, you know, and willingness to say that God doesn't belong to a political party.
Right.
And I think that for so long we put ourselves at an unnecessary disadvantage, because if anybody was a social democrat, it was Jesus. Yeah. And for us to have somehow, you know, I we stood by and watched this from day one, the branding and the taking ownership of the flag and of religion, to me, is just a ploy on the part of the right. And I think that we need on the left to not let ourselves be manipulated that way, and that we should take back ownership of the flag in a positive way, although not in a nationalistic way. And it's tricky how to do that. And the same thing with religion, because there's a lot of people in the Midwest and in all parts of the country, all those states that go red could be blue states. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if I feel like these are some of the things that resonate so much. And you know, just talking back, I guess to harken back briefly to the Sid and Nancy thing, I remember the last words the director said to me as we were finishing that film up was, get your shots, we're going to Nicaragua. What? And there are more going on there? Exactly. And why? And then we went down. Ed Harris starred in it. It was called Walker. It's in the Criterion Collection. Another great film by that director. And it was about basically somebody in the 1850s, real historic figure, William Walker, who went down to, in the expansionist era, to spread democracy, but became, you know, and to replace the Spanish imperialist rule down there. And he became president of Nicaragua in the 1850s. But got, like certain other characters in history, drunk on their power and became a despot, and his democracy turned into a dictatorship, and he was executed, and he was written out of all the American history books. But it was a fascinating story, period film, laced with anachronisms so that you could see, because it was while had the Contra War was going on, it was illegally funded by selling arms to the Middle East that Reagan had going on at the time down there. And it was as much as very much a liberal, you know, led by an anarchist director, anti-American film that was going down shooting while the war was going on, and no doubt probably took some of its profits and gave it to Viva la Revolución, some of its the budget. I remember the completion bond people came down there and wanted to have meetings with Alex, and he was nowhere to be found. It was a kind of madness, but for me it was so interesting because I'd spoken to this wise man that said, well, it sounds like you already know what you're going to find before you get down there, so why bother going? And what do you mean? Well, what if you were just neutral? What if you didn't come down there with the assumption that you know what's going on? And I spoke enough Spanish to be able to pull that off while I was there. And I spoke to all these people, and yes, the embargo had caused life to be brutal down there, and that we were at war with them on the Contra War. But I saw what life was like, as you were talking about as a child in Russia, what life was like in a communist regime. Mm-hmm. And I found it as stifling and suffocating as the stale bubblegum you described there. Then, and I did a film in China, and I experienced the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I think if you haven't seen firsthand what the extremes of communism do, you don't realize that it, and even working in Bulgaria on this film, The Cherry Orchard, which was maybe 9 years after the wall had come down, and I was the only American in it, and it was a great cast, directed by this great Greek director, Michaelis Kokianis, and we were there for 3 months, and we shot it at the ex-king of Bulgaria's estate because it had the greatest cherry orchard anywhere in the world. But we had to deal with a country that had been under a communist rule, a Soviet rule, for 50 years, and it was reeling, and and people didn't know how to behave. It was the same thing I experienced when I was in China later, and when I was in Nicaragua before that. There's no incentive, there's no understanding of human nature in terms of if it's not going to incentivize you, if you get no gain on a personal level from being nice, from being honest, from working hard, you're constantly up against the same things you were describing in Russia in terms of the hardships, you become embittered, and you think, well, why should I bother?
Right, exactly, being nice, exactly.
Friendly. Why should I work hard? Why should I be honest? The only way I'm going to improve the quality of my life is to look like I'm working when I'm not, is to exploit the system as much as possible and get as much from it as I can, and maybe rat out somebody because I'll get brownie points for doing it. And I'll rat out the person that's honest because he might reveal the fact that I'm not.
Right.
And it was so toxic in all three of those environments that my, you know, youthful utopian idealism died each time.
Yeah.
A new death. And that's one of the things that I'm wary of in this sort of vehemence in support of socialism as an alternative, even social democracy. I see the benefits of it, but I also see what it is that troubles many thinking conservatives. about
yeah,
it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not helping that some videos are circulating on social media now where Bernie is praising some of, you know, the, so I think he did some after school programs or school programs. I know he,
there's a treasure trove of this stuff out there just waiting.
And it's really, it's upsetting to me because he was in the Soviet Union and he saw what I saw. We were both there, and granted, I was 12 years old, but I understood. I understood what was going on. I fortunately had some great teachers. I went to an American school, and we talked about what was going on, and I was able to, you know, I mean, obviously, I had smart parents, and just my own experiences. I used to, you know, one of the things that I used to do, because I had such resentment for the Soviet militiamen. Basically, that's what they. There was always a militiaman on every street corner, standing in like a phone booth type of box, staring at you as if you were some kind of terrorist. And so, a girlfriend of mine lived in the American embassy, and there were two driveways into the embassy. And so, there were two guards that would stand in front of those driveways. And so, my girlfriend and I, I'm sure this was my idea, would fuck with them. We would throw eggs at them, and I used to walk up to them and tell them in Russian that I knew where the KGB headquarters were, and it's like, I think they would just look at me because I was such a dork. I was a really dorky kid with big, thick glasses, and I was kind of, not fat, but I was kind of overweight, and I was a dork, but I just resented them so much because I understood what they represented, and I saw the coldness in their eyes. And so, and part of the reason I fucked with them is because, I don't know if you're familiar with the Pentecostal family, but it was this family that ran into the American embassy and sought refuge. They had, they were religious, and they weren't allowed to be religious in Russia. So they wanted to go to America. Eventually, some of them did. One of them got shot. But I became friendly with them. And in fact, they gave us our cat, Hawkeye. But my girlfriend and I would go visit them because they had this one room in the embassy, and there was probably five or six of them. And it was a nice size room, but they all had to share a bathroom and they slept on cots. And so a lot of the Americans would kind of stop by and bring them goodies and treat them nicely. And their window was facing the street, which was right next to the driveway. And so during the summertime, these guards would start fires in front of their windows, and in the wintertime they would put snow, like mounds of snow, so they couldn't see out. And I am always somebody who believes in justice, and I felt like that this was such an injustice, so I would antagonize them as much as I possibly could. And so I understand what it's like, and I wish more people did, but take our words for it. We've been over there, people. We've seen what it's like, and it's fucking awful. Bernie wouldn't praise it.
what's funny, and I hate to generalize and stereotype in any way, and this is because probably about 95% of my closest friends are Jewish, I hate especially any kind of generalization about the Jewish people because it is so anathema and it can be so associated with just an anti-Semitic mindset. But so completely counter to that, I do think that something happened to some of the great Jewish intellectuals were of Bernie's generation. Were so enamored of communism because emotionally they watched it help defeat Nazism. Mm-hmm. And because the one thing that the Soviets were good at was the war of propaganda, the covert war of propaganda.
Good.
They were brilliant mm-hmm. at it. And they're so brilliant at it that they somehow now, and they're still so good at it, even post-Soviet, but, you know, Putin is the classic apparatchik thug that is the one group that profited. They took their greatest minds and had them all slaughtered out there in Siberia while letting this crass, lowest of the low rise to positions of brute power, mm-hmm. and now many of them are oligarchs. It's an absurd thing, but they were good at the war of propaganda. They got the intellectuals, the artists, they went after. You know, that's why when Khrushchev said to Kennedy, I'll get you through your youth.
Yeah.
They did. They targeted. That's why they're so insinuated into our university system. And one of the things that drives the right and conservatives crazy is the extent to which they succeeded in that mission and have for decades controlled so much of the college curriculum. Mm-hmm. But they also got to the artists and the writers, mm-hmm. and people romanticized communism. You know, if you haven't seen it, yep. you can't know.
You can't know because it's
how
not something
soul-crushing it is.
Yeah, it's really soul-crushing. And it's, like I said earlier, I don't believe the United States is on its way to a Soviet kind of rule, but I do think that if Trump is victorious in November, for any reason, whether it's cheating or legitimate, and of course it would be cheating, I think that we are headed to an oligarchy where it's a dictatorship, just like, you know, he's going to run things like Putin.
Well, these
does.
Are the people he's enamored of.
Yeah.
You know, he wants the golden throne. That's what he's always, you know, strived towards. And he's impressed by big military parades. And
yeah,
I
like
saw a thing
asshole.
Today, you know, that circling the arena at the race, at the Indy 500, whatever it was, where he had the motorcade, his limo was the leader of the parade. They had a picture next to Hitler, did the same thing at a racetrack, yeah. in his fancy limo, the equivalent of that era.
Unbelievable.
And he's, I mean, I think it's more than just, you know, apocryphal urban legend that he kept a copy. The one thing he's really studied
right.
is that.
Yeah.
Fascism and dictatorships. And mm-hmm. he's in love with Kim Jong-un mm-hmm. and Putin because they have succeeded in getting people to bow down to mm-hmm. them and bend all the rules in order to accommodate them. And that's his fantasy. And somehow he's used these basic tools of fear, intolerance, and nationalism effectively enough, and now throwing in religion and, you know, all the rest of it, this, however absurd the hypocrisy is for the world's greatest sinner to appear to be a Christian,
yeah.
Someone who can't quote a line of scripture without completely making an ass of himself.
Yeah.
You know, that he's going to use these, you know, blatant ploys to hypnotize the masses that he has as his base to stay, you know, actively in support of him. And it's a deeply disturbing thing because what we're watching with each one of his, he isn't chastened by anything. And Susan Collins thinking he's going to, you know, be a better person after yeah. these things is bullshit.
Of course.
She can't think that.
She doesn't. She's lying.
You know, she couldn't have thought it even when she said it, even
right.
when she retracted it. She knew
mm-hmm.
that she'd hoped she could get away with it. Because
yeah,
how
exactly.
do they justify the fact that they didn't want to hear any evidence after they spent the
yeah.
entire congressional hearing bitching and moaning about no firsthand witnesses?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just, it's all such horseshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
They don't have a leg to stand on. And yet they're just scared that he's going to give him a nickname
mm-hmm.
and they won't get elected. Is their love of power so great?
Well, I have a theory that, you know, the DNC was hacked and at the same time the RNC was hacked, but we haven't heard anything about what came out of the RNC. And, you know, Trump does his own blackmail thing. So
I think
perhaps
so
they have some information on some of the, maybe not all of them, but they have information because why else would somebody like Lindsey Graham go, you know, from
about face. Yeah.
yeah I think it goes beyond.
They have compromise on Lindsey. Absolutely.
Yes.
100%. There's no other way to explain.
Yeah. And I mean,
the
there's like, sometimes I think it's about wanting to, you know, kiss the boot. And sometimes I think it's about fear. But I think a lot of them, you know, there was a lot that came out in that hack and we don't know what it was. I mean, obviously there was enough that came out in the DNC hack. But you know, we heard about that. We didn't hear what came out. So I think a lot of these people are frightened. It's more than just getting called the name. I think that they're afraid that they're going to be exposed for whatever it is that they've done. And they
I agree.
And I don't think it's all of them, but I think it's enough of them that it, you know, that it, but I just hope, that we can, you know, like taking a page from what you're talking about, I do try my best to, I don't necessarily try to engage with them anymore as far as the Republicans on Twitter, because I don't really know what to trust. I don't know if they're real accounts, but I do see the, I see the benefit of people like you when you make the effort. There is a benefit to it, because we are, I mean, I have changed some minds. You know, there was a Republican guy who questioned the need for the Equal Rights Amendment, and he and I, you know, he came out with the typical arguments, and so I didn't get sarcastic with him, which is something that I can do, and I just gave him the facts, and, you know, he read everything that I offered, and he goes, you know what? He goes, yeah, we do need this. And I was really surprised, and I was really grateful that he was willing to keep his mind open, and so
yeah,
I just want to say...
Bless those that...
exactly.
That will read and respond. And that's why I'm trying to, like, I got hit with, you know, so much hostility from, because, you know, the people like Fred Gutenberg and mm-hmm. Andy Ostroff, who've had these incredible personal tragedies.
Yeah.
When they get, I've always had an underdog protector in me.
Yeah.
And on film sets and everywhere, like, I'll do things that will damage me personally in order to protect others that I feel are vulnerable. And so I've gone out on a limb to protect both of those guys, because I just, to see them be assaulted with hostility and accusations and stuff after what they've been through is just, it's almost more than I can bear. And I think that their hearts are really good and their brains mm-hmm. are good and they're doing the right thing out there. And so, you know, I've gone to their defense, and then I've been, you know, piled up on mm-hmm. for doing so by people that are, you know, think that, oh, now suddenly I'm like, I'm a Bloomberg supporter because
I
don't like this black and white thinking, and the people that can't just look at any shades of gray or consider any options. I think we have to keep all our options on the table and just be open-minded about where our support is going to come from,
mm-hmm.
From all angles.
And that's a great way to close. We have to keep, you know, there are shades of gray. Keep your mind open. If you're out there, and keep in mind too, that there are a lot of bad actors out there. There are a lot of fake accounts, or they're real people, but they're meant only to troll. And so just remember that, and don't allow them to get the best of you, because when you do, they've won. That's their purpose in life, in their lives, in their job right now, is to make you fold, make you feel bad. And so just, you know, if you can get through to people, great. If you can't, block them. Just get them out of your life. It's toxic.
Yeah, try maybe 2-3 times to have a civil exchange where you're trying to, you know, either enlighten or gain enlightenment from their point of view. And if it's just, you know, idiotic invective, then you just block them, and that's done, and you're done.
And then you're done, and you don't think about them ever again.
But we still have to keep fighting the good fight. I really do think
we
have to move towards a greater consciousness for the planet and for each other, and keep all options open for where that's going to happen and how that's going to manifest.
Yes, I agree, and I want to thank you for coming on the show today. Why don't you tell people where they can find you?
Well, I go non-political on Instagram because I'm a visual artist mm-hmm. as well as an actor, and I put out stuff on Instagram as Xander Original.
Okay.
And I have to confirm people, but I always do.
Okay.
almost invariably.
I'll put the link in.
And I'm just Xander Berkeley on the Twitter and
on
Facebook.
The Twitter.
I have a fan page I don't pay much attention to.
All right. Well, I will include those links in the Patreon description of the show. So thanks again, Xander. It was great talking to you.
Hey, great talking to you. Thanks so much. It's really, really good.
Awesome.
Glad
All right.
we did this.
Take care.
Okay. Talk soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All righty. Well, that was a That was a conversation, wasn't it? He's an interesting character. I like to hear. I mean, I'd never talked to him in my whole life. I met him on Twitter, and you know, he messaged me, and we talked a little about the idea that actors are empathic. And I thought, you know, I like to have actors on my show, obviously. Although we didn't spend a lot of time talking about his craft. I think, you know, it's always good to just listen, whether you agree on everything or not. As we were saying, it's good to be open and talk to people. So that was a good conversation. Now, I want to kind of go back and reiterate that Steve Bannon in 2018 is reported as saying that he, you know, don't worry about the Democrats. I want to flood, or we're going to flood the zone with shit. We have to attack the media. So that's what their goal is. And I wrote about this on my writing Patreon page yesterday, but over the weekend, there was a story that Bloomberg was considering Hillary Clinton for his vice president. Now, this report originated from Drudge, which is a right-wing propaganda bullshit site. And as soon as I saw it, I knew it was bullshit because, A, it was from Drudge. But, B, I knew Hillary Clinton. Just being having a brain and using my brain told me that a woman who ran for the presidency two times and won the popular vote and had it stolen from her in 2016 is not going to play second fiddle to the billionaire who's entering the race late. She's not going to fucking do that. And so not only did I see people on the right falling for this, of course, because it was red meat for them, but I saw Democrats. I saw Bernie people who hated Hillary getting all riled up like, nah, Hillary's back. No, calm the fuck down. And I saw Hillary supporters like, oh, this might be a good idea. And Bloomberg people, whether they liked it or not, talking about it. Nobody checked the source. The source was Drudge. Worse than Fox. It could have been Rush Limbaugh. People, please. And I'm not saying the guys who are listening to my show and the women who are listening to my show are doing this, because I think that there's a community built here of people who understand what's going on and that we know that we can't trust everything that we see just because it's in a headline. But, you know, a lot of people out there, a lot of Democrats are falling for this shit that Steve Bannon has promised us. We know about this now. You know, I said, if you went into a restaurant and they said to you, we're going to put shit in your food, would you eat it? Well, you have been told shit is going to fill the airwaves. It's going to fill your Twitter feed and your Facebook feed and probably your Instagram feed. Don't eat it. Don't consume the shit. If you see a story that's going to get you all riled up, like Hillary Clinton is going to be Bloomberg's VP, check it. Check the source. The source was Drudge. Just drove me fucking crazy. It drove me fucking crazy because I saw so many people just buying it. And it doesn't mean that I think those people are stupid. I think those people are frightened. I think that they're angry and they're frightened and they don't know what to do. And we have to fucking maintain. We have to maintain. We, you know, it's like I said, you don't want a doctor operating on you who's all like, oh my God, I got to do the right thing. And you don't want that. Don't be that person. Just fucking chill. Look for a source. I talked about that with Sarah Wood. Look for the source. So I'm going to try very, very hard from now until Election Day to keep reinforcing this idea that, yes, we're living in scary times and it's not fun, but we cannot allow those instigators and those chaos agents to get us in a panic, because that is their goal. They want us to panic. They don't want us to trust anybody. They don't want us to trust news media. I mean, I'm going to criticize corporate media when they fuck up. But you know what? We had corporate media when Bill Clinton was the president and when George Bush was the president. And it wasn't like it is now, because right now we've got Steve Bannon and Stephen Miller and Donald Trump. They are flooding our zone with shit that wasn't happening in 1980 and 1990. We didn't have Twitter feeds to get filled with shit. We only had media. So, yeah, corporate media has an agenda, but they're not necessarily our enemy. They may not have our best interest at heart, but they're doing their thing. So as long as we recognize that's their thing and we don't buy hook, line, and sinker everything they push us, we can say, all right, they're telling us that Joe Biden is the number one. That's great. Well, let's take a look and see what happens in the elections. You know what? Everything is going to fall on South Carolina for Joe Biden. I think what's going to happen is, I mean, according to the polls, he has lost a significant amount of support in South Carolina. And I think that support is going to it's going to go to Bloomberg, it's going to go to Klobuchar, and it's going to go to Buttigieg. I think it's, you know, maybe some of it will go to Warren, but it's Biden, so he's representing more of the moderate, you know, part of the party. So I think that a lot of that support's going to get split up, and I think what's going to wind up happening is Joe Biden isn't going to do so well because people don't feel confident in him right now. All right, so I'm done my rant, but it's like I get so upset when I see people falling for this. And it's not out of the fact that I think that people are stupid. I think that people are afraid. We are afraid, and we're allowing fear to dictate how we behave. And we can't. We can't. So, you know, talk about this with your family and friends. Talk to them. Let them know, like, look, we gotta maintain, man. We gotta expect the worst because Trump has no fucking, nobody's holding him back. He can do whatever he wants now. I mean, there's a possibility that he could have the Democratic nominee arrested. I'm getting so worked up I can't pronounce words, but he might do that. And if he does that, we gotta be cool about it. We gotta fucking have a plan. We can't just be all willy-nilly and run around the sky is falling, because how will that help? It won't. All right. I am done with my lecture. I hope you enjoyed the show today. Now, I want to remind you that you can find me on Twitter at Author Kimberly, KIMBERLEY. And if you'd like to read my book, Peyton's Choice, go to Amazon.com. You can also find The Virgin Diaries and American Woman and Ain't No Sunshine, Men Reveal the Pain of Heartbreak. Friendly reminder that on Monday, I will be talking to Jody Hamilton. And as I mentioned in the intro, Liz Winstead is scheduled for the 26th, which is Wednesday. That one's going to be a little later in the day. So here's what I have to say about that. I hate announcing, especially somebody like Liz Winstead, because she's so well known and she's famous. Oftentimes people at her stature have last minute schedule changes. So if it happens that she has a last minute schedule change, I will alert all of you, because I'll have to do a show on Thursday. And if that happens, you know, obviously I'll alert you. But just in case, she's not going to be able to make it until after 5 p.m. Usually I do my shows between 12 and 1. So you will get it later, providing she's on the show. But if not, you'll get an email, and I will do a show for you guys on Thursday. And I'll make sure to have somebody. And that'll be that. So hope you had fun. See you next time.